Hey, what's up, podcast? This is Dan. This is the pre-roll for episode 72. This is an interview with Heidi Light. Heidi is a real sort of knowledge expert in the field of, you know, sort of what would be known as like alternative medicine or alternative therapies. She's a counselor and author. She's also practices Reiki, and she's also a medium as well. She's full of really useful knowledge. Her book that she talks about, which is The Ethics of Energy Healing and Medicine, is really interesting because we kind of talk about what to avoid, you know, what to look for when you're searching for someone, because, you know, I'm open-minded enough to understand that sometimes, you know, traditional therapy doesn't always help everyone. So really a lot of this episode is to educate, because I didn't know any of this stuff. You know, I'm not an expert. I don't know any of the stuff that Heidi spoke about. So it was really educational for me. It was also, you know, just really interesting getting her point of view as well. And just, knowing what to look out for and what to avoid. I think you'll get a lot from this episode if you approach it with an open mind. Really appreciated having Heidi on the show. She was a great guest as well, explained herself very thoroughly. So yeah, just really hope that you enjoy this episode, because I know I did, and I'm very proud to publish this. So yeah, enjoy the episode, guys, and until next time, we'll speak later. Good evening, welcome to Know Yourself. I'm here with Heidi Light, and today we're going to talk a little bit about her story, her background. She is an author and a counsellor based in Ontario, Canada. Welcome to the show. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you so much, Dan. Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah. it's always nice because, like, I kind of have sometimes these, like, long-distance Skype calls, and it's always nice to get, like, you know, a little slice of, like, another person's culture. And, yeah, it's just, I've actually had two people from Canada recently, so it's really nice, like, never really spoken to anyone from that region before.
Yeah, it's nice. It is a different viewpoint, isn't it? And it's nice to gather different viewpoints from the world to get a perspective on things.
Yeah, because, like, before the episode, we were chopping it up a little bit about, you know, the differences between counselling over in the UK and counselling over in Canada. And also, you know, you'll get into it a little bit more about your book and, you know, energy medicine, but, like, how it's more widely accepted over in this part of the world as opposed to, you know, your part of the world. It's just really interesting. So how we usually, like, start off the episode is, you know, we chop it up a little bit about your background and, you know, who you are as a person. And the way I usually say it is, you know, if you were to write a book about yourself, you know, how would you do your chapter one? How would you tell people what your sort of origin story is to get into this point right now?
Yeah, actually, I really like that question. Being an author, I appreciate that question. and I think probably my first chapter might scare some people.
Wow.
And what I mean by that is, you know, I really firmly believe I'm here today, and I've walked the path I've walked because I had so many difficult experiences as a child growing up. You know, everything from traumatic household to a lot of the things that I talk about in my book. A lot of painful experiences that kind of drove me to pursue what I've pursued. And I know a lot of other therapists and counselors too can relate to that. A lot of us actually went through school for psychology to try to figure out our own stuff, or stuff from our family of origin, to try to understand it better. And I'm no different. I wanted to understand, you know, what was wrong in my family, why it was going on. And, you know, all these years later, I'm still trying to figure it out. Aren't we all?
It's a journey, isn't it?
Yeah, totally. I think it's an ongoing process. I don't think we ever, you know, get all the answers, but we just try to understand it more and more and more. And I'm feel very fortunate that I'm at a place in my life now where I've gathered so much information, so much experience and research, and and I've lived through so much that I can now turn around and offer that to the people, and that makes me very happy. Everything I do is in order to try to help someone else. So if what I went through means that I can help someone else, then I'm really good at that.
Yeah, because you've got so much empathy for what you went through. You're like, I literally want no one else to ever have to go through that.
That's right, yeah. And I do. I have a whole lot of compassion for what we go through as human beings and why we go through it. And so my drive is always to relieve that burden in some way. If I can make it easier for somebody else, then I'm a happy person.
So naturally, I imagine from quite an early age, you had some of these traits of kindness and compassion towards others and a willingness to, because I don't know about you, I've always felt like I'm the kind of person that sat back and listened a lot more, maybe. I wasn't a massive extrovert. I much prefer one-to-one deep conversations. Is that kind of what you found?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I remember when I was a teenager even thinking, gosh, I don't really want to talk to anybody unless it's about something meaningful. I just really had no interest in that. And yeah, I think a lot of us, with especially high sense of empathy or compassion, we did spend a long time observing. And I think we learn a whole lot about people and a whole lot about the world by observing.
Yeah.
I think we learn more by observing than participating, really.
Yeah, I've always been a bit of I go to coffee shops and naturally just end up people watching.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, I relate. And yes, I had actually a really overwhelmingly strong empathic sense and empathic ability. And I talk about this in the book too. It was actually really difficult for me because I would have such a degree of empathy that I would actually intrinsically know what was wrong with a person, not just or what was going on with them, not just emotionally but physically as well. I would know why they were experiencing what they were experiencing, and it was very difficult for me. And at that time, there was no way to understand what that was. A little kid, there was no way, no one around me to explain what that was.
It's difficult because you're taking on your emotions and someone else's as well.
Yeah, I actually, for probably the first 20 years of my life, had no idea what I actually thought and felt, because I was so bombarded and would feel inside of me what everybody else felt and thought, that I didn't know where I began and ended.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was difficult.
It's something that I found with other empaths or people with a lot of empathy, is that I certainly found it myself. I was so consumed with what everyone else felt and thought that I would always push myself to one side, and as a result, that's one of the reasons I ended up in therapy, is because I didn't know who I was because I was just full of everyone else's opinions and ideas of who I was, and
me too. The interesting part is all these years later, us as counselors, that ability to push ourselves aside actually helps us.
Yeah.
When we're working with people, right? It's interesting.
Yeah, because you take the ego out. I don't know about you, I found it in conversations where you're listening, you kind of park your ideas to one side because you're actually what they're saying is more important.
Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't matter what your ideas are. It only matters what their ideas are. And so, yeah, it is interesting that trauma itself, or, the empathy itself, what made us kind of lose ourselves down the road, is what makes us be able to be present for someone else.
Yeah. Totally agree. It's one of the things that I'm really grateful for, for having and being able to, recognize and control it. It was a really big thing for me.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
And
it's such a cool tool to have now down the road. I mean, it's so hard when you're going through it because it feels like it's the thing that's tearing you apart. But I do think with everything, we can take it and have it tear us apart, or we can turn it and make it become something useful for us and for other people.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how I approach everything. Is okay, this sucked, but
yeah.
What can I do with it that's now going to be a positive force in my life and in the world instead?
Every counselor or therapist that I've met, either online or offline, it feels as though there's been some sort of adversity or triggering event that has led them to sort of like inquire further about themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's like that sets us on the path to self-exploration, to try to understand, put the pieces together.
Yeah.
It would be nice if we could walk that path in a gentler way. That's great.
It's difficult because you have to you go through your journey and like, you know, you're at work and you're like, I could really just not do with like having to like drill into like all these really painful parts of myself, you know, stuff like, you know, it's like what you said, there's stuff from childhood and stuff like that, and you're at work and you're like, I'm just genuinely trying to get on with my job and I can't because I'm just consumed with a particular emotion. Or you know, it can be quite difficult stuff because, you know, when we enter therapy, we think that it's all just in the room, but it's not. You take it out with you and it occupies the other 23 hours of your day.
It does. Yeah. And you can change your life, move to a different country, you know, change your relationships, change everything about it, but it's always with you. It never goes away.
Mm.
And, you know, it can be challenging, overwhelming. There are times when I wanted to crawl out of my own brain somehow.
Yeah.
And it makes me completely understand, you know, why we become addicted, why we do the things we do. It's like you just want to some relief from that. You just want to escape from that for a while. Yeah.
So tell us a little bit. Oh, go on, sorry.
Oh, it's okay. I was just going to say the things we go through aren't easy.
Mm.
It's hard to be a human being.
Yeah. It's naturally tough because you're dealing with everything that life has to throw at you, all the interpersonal relationships and dynamics within those, and then also navigating through the world, which naturally has friction, and, you know, figuring out who you are in a very loud world.
Yes, and, you know, I often say we didn't get a handbook when we came into this life either. You know, nobody gave us this little guidebook when we were born that said, hey, this is how to do life. This is how your emotions work. This is how your body works. You know, this is how you navigate through this thing. It's like, yeah, we didn't get that. So we're all just kind of stumbling along, bumbling along, trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So my next question was going to be about your book. You know, what made you want to write this book?
This book has been percolating for about 40 years.
Wow.
And I know I'm giving away my age. but really, it has been in the works for 40 years. Yeah. It's about energy medicine and in particular ethics.
Yeah.
In energy medicine, which encompasses everything from intuitive work to healing work like Reiki. Different modalities, including psychic work, shamanism, mediumship, past life stuff, everything. That's what energy medicine encompasses. It's pretty much everything in that invisible world.
Yeah.
And that, for me, that invisible world has never been invisible. I've always seen it. I've always interacted with it. That was part of my difficulty as a child, is that I would see all these things that other people weren't seeing. And I had no way to understand it or cope with it or figure out what it was. I grew up in a very different household. I grew up in a metaphysical household. And my father was a paranoid schizophrenic. He was also an alcoholic and highly abusive. But he read everything from Edgar Cayce to the 12th Planet. And he would drag us to every psychic fair across the country.
So, like, tarot cards, like, stuff like that.
Everything, yeah. Psychic readings, everything. And so it was just commonplace for us to have conversations about spirit entities and past lives over the dinner table when we weren't, you know, when he wasn't screaming at everyone.
Yeah.
So the interesting part for me was I had these abilities. I could see everything. Then I grew up in that kind of household too, where everything, there were no boundaries put around it. It was just blown wide open. And it made me very sick growing up. So I was literally from the age of two, what we now call a medical intuitive. We didn't have that term back then, obviously. I was clairvoyant, clairaudient, clairsentient. And so I went through, you know, 20 years of my life trying to figure out what that was and how to control it, how to manage it, how to be okay with it, how to be healthy within it. And I was not healthy within it. And at the same time, you know, I went to school for training to be a counselor, got all those psychological understandings too. Started doing energy work with clients because it was seemed to be way more helpful than traditional talk therapy in a lot of cases, not every case. But throughout those years, it kept coming back around to me, this world that I could not escape. And I would see all these things happening in that invisible world with people who are starting to embrace it. And everything from, you know, being at the psychic shows and seeing how people were behaving with these abilities that they had, to, you know, in the last 15 years, I have met so many other practitioners in energy medicine, and it's become so popular now, that there are all these boundaries being crossed, all these problematic things happening. And I think in our Western culture, all these problematic things are happening because we don't have a framework to understand this energy medicine. Other cultures in the world do, but in the West, we don't. And so it's a very, very misunderstood thing. And because it's misunderstood and we don't have the framework that we need, everybody's kind of going willy-nilly with it. And so I would see all these unethical things happening. And I kept stock of all those unethical things for the last 40 years. And then actually reached a point, I had a big life shift, big change. I had to start over and I was totally lost. And I just kind of checked in with myself one day and said, okay, what can you do? You don't know what you're going to do. You don't know how you're going to do life, but right now, what can you do?
Yeah.
What do you know now in this moment? And in that moment, there was this book in my head that had been percolating for 40 years. And it's like, well, I can do that.
Yeah.
I don't know what else I'm going to do. I don't know how I'm going to live my life, what decisions I'm going to make, but I know that's in there. So why don't I just do that? I'm just going to try sitting down and getting all these experiences and ideas out of my head and onto paper. And I just kind of went from there. It was an amazing thing that it did. I'm also grateful that it's all out of my head.
I guess it was kind of like cathartic in some way.
Yeah, it really was, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I wanted to share all the experiences I've had and all the things I've seen and inspire people to look at things in a different way so that we can approach each other from a place of respect, of a place of consent, a place of honoring this whole process that a lot of us really don't understand, and to try to provide some of those understandings.
What's an example of like what you've observed that's like unethical, if that makes sense?
Yeah. Oh, everything from, you know, you go to a psychic for a reading and they read the wrong person instead of you. But you don't realize that till after you get home. I've had tons of clients who said, oh my God, this person actually read my sister instead of me. And I didn't realize that till I got home. You know, which can be a really dangerous thing when you go to someone, when you're vulnerable and you go to someone looking for help. And you there's always a part of us that even if we don't trust the information, we're going to use it in some way. So whether we take that information and use it for our life or we reject the information, that information has still impacted us.
Yeah.
So it changes us. And then if you go to someone who's not connecting into the right thing to give you that information, it's a really dangerous thing. I was at a show just last week, and someone asked me the same thing. It's like, well, what's an example of something unethical? And I said, well, it was actually a psychic fair. I was trying to get people to know about my book.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, this is the perfect location because all this stuff is happening right here. So a woman asked me, you know, what's an example? I said, well, when you walked around the room today, all the psychic tables, people offering readings, I said, did you have anyone say to you, oh, I know that your back's hurting right now, and I know what's causing it. Come sit at my table. I'll tell you all about it. And she's like, whoa, actually, somebody did say something similar to me, not about my back, but they said, well, it's a great marketing tool, isn't it? They can intuitively read something about you that you didn't think anyone would ever know. And then it's like, well, come sit at my table and pay me and I'll do a reading for you. And I said, because we don't, the general public, because we don't really know anything about this, I said, we kind of get hooked in by that marketing tool, but it doesn't occur to us that it actually wasn't okay for someone to intuitively read our bodies without our permission.
Mm.
And it was interesting because she stopped and looked at me and she's like, oh my God, you're right. She's like, so that person was like doing a reading on me. And I said, well, we were doing a portion of a reading and they didn't have your consent to do it, which is really not okay. So we all have a right to privacy. We have a right to not have other people know our deep, dark stuff.
Yeah.
Unless we say it's okay for them to know it.
Yeah.
You know, it would literally be like someone digging through your personal financial records without your consent. It's no different in the intuitive world, you know, where people are accessing this personal information about us when they really shouldn't be doing that. Another example is someone walked into a crystal shop. Her dad had just passed over recently, and she walked in there and said that, you know, that she was looking for a crystal to help her with the grief. And the guy behind the counter instantly started connecting in to her dad and giving messages from him. And she was so disturbed because she wasn't emotionally in a place where she was ready to hear any of that. She hadn't asked for it. The guy just went ahead and did it.
Mm.
And I really want us in the energy world to look at putting in place the same boundaries and consent that we have in the psychology world. And more. I think our basic understandings as counselors and as therapists really provide us with those boundaries that we need to make sure that our clients are safe and that we're also safe, that everybody's respected, that healing actually occurs. And we don't have that in the energy world. There are a few associations out there, but I've checked pretty much every professional energy medicine association in North America and in the UK. And if you look at their code of ethics, it's a couple of paragraphs.
Yeah.
There's really anything there. And we need them. We need ethical standards. We need them in place. We need a framework to do this work, just like we do with therapy and counseling.
Yeah, because it's
a big long answer.
No, it's all right. It's quite scary, isn't it? Because, like, you know, I don't profess to know anything about, you know, crystals, being a psychic, like tarot reading, like any of that sort of stuff. Like, I don't know about hypnotherapy. I actually did an interview with a hypnotherapist about a couple of weeks ago, and that was interesting. But like, it's exactly what it says on the tin. It's an alternative, you know, method of therapy, you know. And I think just because it's got the label alternative, you know, and it's up to you whether you believe in it or not. I think just because it's got that label, it still needs, you know, because it's people at the end of the day, and it's like what you said, and I love what you said, you know, it's about when you said about doing a reading on someone without their consent, because that'd be like someone having a stand at like a psychology convention and just starting to like break someone down.
Yeah, trying to psychoanalyze you, or, yeah, dig into your emotional stuff.
Yeah, because, like, you probably often get asked by people, like, because, you know, because you're a counsellor, like, oh, I bet you know what I'm thinking and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah. It's like, actually, I purposefully try not to know what anyone else is
thinking. Yeah.
Because I respect your right to privacy.
Yeah. And, like, it's just,
it's not that you can like read their thoughts anyway. It's just that you've got like a general idea of what's going on for someone, but it's like you generally don't go around doing it to everyone because it's like, well, I've got permission to do it.
That's right, yeah.
It's,
and, you know, I think a lot too about, you know, when psychology first started, our history isn't that long. It's like, what, 100 years, maybe 120 years?
Yeah.
When it started, it was also an alternative therapy. You know, when medical science first started, it was considered alternative. We didn't have standards in place for either of those things when they first started. And we realized the need for that along the way. And for me, all I'm saying is, okay, we have a need for this now too. We have over 1,000, it's kind of mind blowing. There are over 1,000 energy medicine modalities being practiced in the world now. And most of those have just come to the forefront in the last 15 years.
Mm.
The hugest portion of them in the last 10 years. So it's, as a global phenomenon, this is a new phenomenon. And so we don't have, it's like technology, we don't have the parameters in place yet to make sure that it's a safe venue for everyone, that it's being done ethically with the considerations we need to make. So it's something I'm very passionate about because I've seen so much of it, obviously.
Mm.
We do get passionate about the things that we're directly involved in, right? Because we see the pitfalls of it. We're in it on a daily basis, so it's easy for us to comment on it. It's and I think awareness about it, I'm always a fan of awareness, but I think some awareness and education about it is the biggest thing.
Yeah, and that's it. And this is why I thought it was really interesting getting you on the show, because I've never really covered stuff off like this before. I'm starting to speak to people of different like walks of life, and it's really interesting because, like I say, I don't really know anything about these areas, and it's good for people to know that there's alternatives out there. Because, you know, I was speaking to the lady I was speaking about that I interviewed, who's a hypnotherapist. Her name's Angela, and you know, traditional talking therapy didn't work for her son, but the RTT and hypnotherapy did. So, like, you know, if it works for someone, it works for someone.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and the, you know, the proof is kind of out there. In North America, we spend billions and billions of dollars on alternative healthcare. About 80% of North Americans say that they use alternative healthcare of some kind. Now, that includes, you know, naturopaths and vitamin supplements and things like that. That's still considered alternative here.
Yeah.
But it includes all of the energy medicine modalities as well. I mean, that's huge. That's a lot of people pursuing these services. So, it, you know, we can't really dispute the fact that it's blossoming. And
yeah.
And if it's blossoming, well, then we need to start talking about, well, like, there's ethics in every field.
Yeah.
This field's no different. We have to talk about the ethics of it. There's no getting away around that. We have to talk about it in every field.
Mm.
And this one isn't being talked about yet. There's only, besides me, there are only two other authors that I know of in the world that are even talking about this topic. And that's not a lot.
Yeah. It's a big world out there.
Yeah. And actually, one of them is in the UK with you. Her name's Midge Murphy. She focuses more on the legal aspect of it, though.
Oh, okay, interesting.
Yeah, and in the US, there's Donna Eden, who has a handbook for practitioners to work through some ethical considerations that might come up in their work. I'm the first one, I believe, to talk about the whole scope of the intuitive process and what it means to do that ethically.
Yes.
Yeah, which is a whole thing in itself. And I find even people who are really practiced in their field and have done this for so many years, there are still things that they haven't considered either. And things that I didn't consider in decades either, that I've only, you know, come to realize are important after so many years of doing this. So, yeah, I can say with all certainty that I wasn't exactly ethical about the way I did all this stuff either in the first 30 years of my life, because, again, nobody gave us a handbook.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and that's part of how I can relate my story to other people too and say, yeah, I did that too, but here's why we can't do that or why we shouldn't do that.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
My next question that's kind of coming to me is that, you know, how do you know, like, I bet it's frustrating for you when you see people in your mind that don't have the gift, and then you see people that do have the gift practicing. Is that frustrating for you? Like, especially with, like, being, like, psychic and, you know, doing readings and that sort of thing.
So one of the things that I think, and of course it's my opinion, everything's just my opinion.
Yeah.
To me, our intuitive ability is not a gift. And I think when we think of it as a gift, I think that is part of what gets us into ethical trouble.
Okay.
I do believe that as human beings, we are intuitive. And, you know, we can all think of babies that we see talking to invisible people all the time, because we're born with those intuitive channels open. And I think we are taught to close them down because we don't understand it, so it's not acceptable. There are cultures in the world where it is acceptable, and so those kids don't learn to shut it down, they learn to use it. I think us thinking of it as a gift tends to put us in a place of ego where we think that those of us who do it have something special we need to offer to the world and other people don't.
Mm.
And I think coming from that place really... you know, we talked about being able to step aside when we're working with people. And I think if we're coming from a place of ego, as in I have a special gift, then you're not able to step aside. And I've seen that way of thinking lead to so many things that are the opposite of healing.
Yeah.
And to me, the point is healing.
Yeah.
So doing it in a way that's not creating that, then it's problematic. So again, that's my view of it. And I know not everyone agrees with that. But, you know, I do think that it is that way of looking at it puts so much pressure on it, so much onus on it. It puts adds these other implications to it.
Yeah.
That aren't necessarily healthy or respectful.
I see that.
Yeah. And I've taught people for years and years, like 20 years, and I've yet to meet a person who, if they decided to connect into their intuitive ability, who couldn't do it. It doesn't happen. Anyone who wants to connect into it, connects into it. They just have to be shown where it lives. It's kind of like it doesn't even need to be turned on. It's there. It's working all the time. They just don't know how to pay attention to it.
Mm.
It's actually a lot like self-awareness.
Yeah.
You know, you learn to pay attention to what you're thinking, what you're feeling. To me, it's the same thing. You learn to pay attention to or listen to the intuitive flow that's happening inside of you at all times. It doesn't go away. It doesn't actually get switched off. We just don't know how to pay attention to it.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So, and I think it's a hugely useful thing. I mean, I do really believe that it's part of us as human beings, and we have no idea how to use it for our lives or how to pay attention to it. And when we do learn how to do that, it can help us phenomenally.
Mm-hmm.
It's just another level of awareness.
Mm.
Another level of self-awareness.
Yeah. So for you, when I'm trying to think, when you were training to be a counselor,
yeah,
I guess, What was the sort of biggest leap that you took in your own self-awareness?
Training to be a counselor.
Because it's like, very intense, you and hopefully I'm buying you time here to think. It's all right. Because it's a very intense process. You're putting every part of yourself under the microscope to... like really figure out who you are so you can be as like best service to other people.
Yeah. You know, I think actually the best awareness that I had through the process was in grad school, and you know, having to put aside my thought of what I can do for people, how I can help people.
Mm.
Because I think what I came to realize was, well, that's just me stepping into that picture where I really shouldn't be. So we talked about stepping aside.
Yeah.
So that be present for someone, right? And I think it was a big thing for me, kind of a turning point for me, when I realized, oh, well, if I'm concerned about my own process of wanting to help, then I'm not really setting myself aside to be there for that person, because that's about me, not about them.
True.
So that was a big revelation for me, the being able to step into that role of, this isn't about me, this is about the person in front of me and whatever they need. And if I can provide what they need, that's excellent. That makes me very happy. But it's not about me. It's not about me being successful in that.
Mm.
It's not about me being able to do that well. It's actually just about them. That was a big one for me.
When you learn to take the ego out, you know, it's really quite powerful. Like, you know, I've been talking sometimes and just thought to myself, like, I'm just saying this because it's actually quite self-serving. And, you know, you start to learn, like, actually, like, you know, what I've got to say is important, but, like, it's also important to let someone else have their say and, you know, just genuinely be a good person by, like, you know, paying, like, all my undivided, like, giving that person my undivided attention, and being of service to them. Like, it's important that they're heard and their point of view is, like, respected and listened to. And if I've got something important, I can say it later. And if it never happens, then at least I know I've respected that person and listened to them to the best of my ability.
Absolutely. Yeah. To me, that's all about being present in the moment with what's needed in the moment, instead of being wrapped up in our heads about what we think should happen or what we want to happen or what we want it to look like.
Yeah.
And it's a very liberating perspective to come from.
Hmm.
It is nice to kind of actually set your needs aside for a while.
Yeah.
And just be there for somebody else. And then, yeah, when the time's right, you can be there too for what you need.
Hmm.
But yeah, it's, and those are very fine lines, right? We're all really trying to figure out where those lines are, no matter how practiced we are at it, no matter how many years we've been doing it. You still try to figure out those lines.
Yeah. Mm, that's right. I've got another question. Why do you think people, well, in your experience, why do you think other people choose alternative therapy over traditional, like, talking therapy? What's, like, the main sort of feedback that you've had from people?
I think there is a wow factor. That is one element. There is a wow factor in the alternative work. And I know it's a little bit of a seeking that wow factor for some people. There's also a little bit in our culture. I don't know if it's so much that you guys have the same thing, but I know in North America, we very much have a take a magic pill, quick fix mentality that's kind of perpetuated in part by our medical system. And so I think people are gravitating towards, well, if I can get, you know, go to a psychic and get a quick answer to something versus doing the work, then I'm going to do that.
Mm.
So there's part of that. But there is also, there are a whole lot of people that I've seen over the years where the traditional medical or psychological model has failed them in some way.
Interesting.
Where they cannot get to the bottom of what's happening with them by any traditional means. And that's when a lot of people have ended up coming to me for the alternative stuff. And that's, we were talking before, that's what I specialize in, is getting to the root of why something is happening, what is actually happening and why. And we address it at the root, and then a lot of times the symptoms just kind of resolve themselves, instead of our current models that work a lot on symptoms and don't really get to the root. And it's interesting, I hear this, you know, I'm a hypnotherapist as well, and I see that even in the hypnosis world, where people will say, well, I went to a hypnotist, I didn't get the results because they didn't get to the root of what was going on. And I always think, oh my gosh, who did you go to? Because if you do hypnotherapy right, it actually does go to the root of what's going on with you.
Yeah.
I shouldn't say but right. I do regression. So regression is always getting to the root of what the issue is and addressing it at the root versus working on habits or symptoms. So it, but everybody's different in the way they approach the work. For me, that's how I do it. So I think there's a lot of reasons why people are pursuing alternative stuff.
Yeah.
You know?
That's
wow factor, quick fix, or they just really need to get the root of it because they haven't been able to.
It's interesting. Yeah, it's really good to get your point of view because, like, I feel like you gave quite, like, a balanced point of view. You, you know, you accepted that there is a certain reality of things that people don't want to, you know, because, like, as you know, like, counselling, like, it's a long-term process a lot of the time. You know, it can be 6 months to years. Like, I've been going, I still go to therapy now, and I've been going for 5 years.
Yep, so do I.
Yeah.
I've been going for 20 years.
Wow.
But, you know, it's expected for us here. I don't know if it's expected for you guys there. Like, if we're counselors, we are expected to pursue our own therapy. And it's actually something I talk about in the book, too. It's expected in the field of psychology that if we're going to work with other people,
yes.
Work with their difficult emotional issues, that we make a concerted effort to address our own emotional issues so that we can best serve them.
Yes.
Since I did my training in counseling over 20 years ago, I have also pursued my own therapy. And, you know, that's also something I see in the alternative world, too. I see so many people doing healing work and intuitive work, but they are not receiving for themselves, and they're not working through their own stuff.
Mm.
And it's dangerous. We can really mislead our clients if we're not working through our own issues. I heard one of your podcasts about transference and projection.
Oh, yeah.
And those very issues are the reason why we need to work through our own stuff. We can identify when that's happening. You know, we can walk ourselves through the stuff we need to so we can be present for our clients and do all that stuff. So, yeah, not everybody's okay with the long haul or doing the work. I think we are really experiencing this epidemic in the world, but especially in our Western culture, where we're really scared of what we feel.
Yeah.
It's crazy. There, I see so many messages being sent around now that are about, oh, get rid of your toxic emotions or your negative, release negative emotions. And I cringe. I really cringe because it's, wow, there's no such thing as a negative emotion. There's actually no such thing as a toxic emotion. All of our emotions have value and purpose. We're kind of like cutting off our right legs and only using our left and wondering why we can't walk right.
Yeah.
And it scares me. And I think that's why people are scared of the work. It's because they're scared of their own feelings. They don't know how to understand them. And we're being told, the messages we're being told are telling us some of those feelings aren't good. You shouldn't be feeling those. I think that's not doing anyone a good service.
It's interesting you say that because, like, in my own therapy at the moment, like, I've got, like, to a really interesting point, and it's almost like I've gone, we've gone, like, real basic at the moment. Like, we're talking about, like, basic emotions because it's just a particular point in my therapy that I'm at. Like I found that I've always kind of suppressed certain emotions, and we're kind of looking into that and discovering it. And it's, like, emotions like anger and disgust that I'm looking at, and, like, I literally said to my therapist, and I said, like, I didn't even know disgust was an emotion. Like, and it was really interesting. She was like, and it's completely natural to feel these things. And she was like, you know, anger is one of your most basic emotions.
Yeah.
And it kind of gave me permission to, like, feel it for the first time.
Oh, that's great. Mm. Yeah, exactly, right? And that makes me feel so good because I think it's so powerful. I think acceptance is so powerful and so paramount. I don't, because you know, we can only change the things that we acknowledge, and they only change through acceptance. This is my viewpoint.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying we need to change anger. Actually, I feel, I don't know if I have a unique viewpoint about things, but I always tell my clients, you know, if you're not actually angry about what's happening in the world right now, then you're not looking. Anger is healthy. It's necessary. It's an excellent motivator. Every good revolution in the world has always been sparked by somebody being angry about some injustice.
Yeah.
If we're not angry about those injustices, then there's kind of something wrong with us. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And we have a part switched off. So I think getting in touch with that is really awesome, really healing, really necessary. And I kind of wish the world as a whole right now would get in touch with how angry they are. Yeah. Then we could do some good things with it.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, once you start, like, valuing and accepting that those emotions are there and they're okay to, you know, come to terms with, you know, I think, I got really angry the other day for, like, it's the first time, like, I've ever, like, really flipped out about something. I was in a car park, and it was about 10 o'clock at night, and I'd just finished going to the shop and bought some, like, groceries and stuff like that. I put it in my passenger seat, and I was just sat in the front texting, and I saw someone reversing, and I was like, oh, they'll stop. And then I looked up again, and they were closer, so I beeped my horn. And they just carried on and went straight into the back of my car.
Oh no, they hit your car?
Yeah, they full on, like, hit my car.
Oh.
So, for a second, like, I was just thinking, ah, shit, like, I'm gonna have to, like, get his details, and we're gonna have to, like, talk it through, and I was, like, kind of anxious about the kind of conflict that you have with someone when you get their insurance details. I was, like, a bit anxious about that. And then, sure. When I was expecting him to pull up next to me, he drove off.
Oh, gosh.
And it was, like, really interesting what happened next, because the old me would have just, like, left him, like, to drive off. And, like, you know, I would have just been really upset with myself about it, and I would have internalized it and eventually, like, suppressed how I felt.
Yeah.
But instead, I turned on my engine, and I just saw red, and I, like, chased the guy across town.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah. I followed him back to his house, and I got out my car, and I was in the middle of the street, and this guy had just got out of his car as well, and he was looking at me, like, really weird, and I was like, what the fuck do you think you're doing? And I just, like, unloaded and went ballistic. Like, I wasn't aggressive or anything. I was just like, what do you think you're doing driving into my car and then driving off?
Hey, yeah.
And I said, like, you know, what do you think you're doing? And he said, oh, I didn't realize I'd gone into your car. And I was like, how do you not realize that you reversed in someone's car?
Yeah, seriously.
And, like, the point of it is, like, that was such a big moment for me, because, like, and that only happened, like, 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
It was a big moment, because for the first time I'd released it, and it was in, like, a really healthy way, and when I looked at my car, there was no damage done to it, but his bumper was ruined. So that's his fault. So I just said, look, no harm, no foul, I'm just gonna go. But I said, next time when you're reversing, I suggest you look in your mirrors. And I just left.
Good for you. Well, I think that's such an important part of our human process, right? It's like, instead of just keeping that all in and shoving it down and internalizing it and having it cause all these problems like depression and anxiety, to express what you had a right to express, I think, in a healthy way. It's not like you punched the guy out, right?
No.
But to express what you're feeling and had every right to feel, I think, is really important.
Mm.
But a lot of times we feel that we don't have the right to do that. and there weren't, you know, or that's wrong. Our culture anyway, right now is saying that's totally wrong. And I think that's exactly why we have people just busting at the seams then and going ballistic, because we're told over and over and over that what you feel isn't okay.
Mm.
And then it just bottles up and you explode.
Yeah, that's exactly, yeah, what I used to do. But I'd never explode. I would just, like...
Internalize it?
Yeah, implode.
Yeah, I did the same. And it was all about anger and, you know, and it was all justified. My anger was all justified. But yeah, I didn't have an outlet for it. It was not okay for me to express it. And yeah, it turned inwards. And I have suffered in my life greatly from depression and anxiety, and all of that stuff turned inward. And it is interesting. It's kind of like what we were talking about before. It's like, now I know how to take that and turn it into something productive and useful. And it's interesting. I saw my therapist today. And I was just telling her how it is interesting that I actually write about are all the things that I'm angry about in my blog and in everything that I do. I'm actually talking about the things that make me angry and upset, but I talk about them in a way where it's non-judgmental, it's compassionate, it's understanding why we do what we do, and here's what we can do about it. Here's a solution. Here's how we can make this productive.
Mm.
And that's how I approach everything. So for me, it's been a really healthy thing and continues to be a really healthy thing, because I can actually channel that anger into something that's good for my life, good for other people, hopefully good for the world. And then it becomes a really positive thing. Not that it's ever a bad thing, but I think it's what we do with it that matters.
Mm.
You know, we can use it to create, we can use the stuff that we feel to create something hateful and horrible in the world, or we can use it to create something positive and contributive to the world.
Yeah.
And we have that choice. I think a lot of people don't realize that we do have that choice. It's what we do with it that matters.
Yeah. And I find as well, I don't know about you, I find that when I understand something, that's like almost like half the battle. Like, yeah. When I understand how I feel about something, I then feel different about how I feel, if that makes sense.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, it makes complete sense to me.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's understanding is first, absolutely. And I think everything else is built on that. I think as soon as we understand it, it actually innately shifts it anyway. Into something more constructive, right?
Yeah. Like, there's a lot that I understand now about, like, my childhood and other things, like growing up, and just because I understand it, I'm like, okay, that's all right. Or like, or you learn to make peace with certain things because you're like, well, there's nothing that can be done because that person's no longer here or whatever, you know. Mm-hmm. you learn to make peace with it instead. So knowing can be sometimes just a fix in itself, like knowing that, yeah, like that's why counseling's so powerful, because it's someone sitting there and you explaining, you know, parts of your life, and they reflect back to you what they think about that particular thing, like honestly and without judgment, and they've actually listened to you with empathy. All these tools come together and they present to you like an honest reflection of reality based on their point of view. And you know, they'll say like, well, actually what happened to you was pretty bad, or, you know, it would have made me feel like this. And it kind of validates how you think you've felt for a lifetime, but now you actually give yourself permission to feel that.
Yeah, I think those two things are so critical, validation and permission.
Hmm.
And it's such an essential process. We all need it, but we don't realize we need it. And we don't really get the perspective that we need on what we go through when we're just inside our heads with it all the time. We don't really get the perspective that we need until we do reflect it off of someone else, or someone else reflects it back to us. And then we can see the things that we weren't capable of seeing ourselves, because we don't have perspective inside our ourselves. There's just our viewpoint and no other viewpoint. So how do we get a healthy perspective on it? Well, we bounce it off of something or someone else so it can come back to us in a new way.
Mm.
And I think I'm a I know I'm biased, but I am a huge fan of counseling. and I really do think that every person in the world should have their own counselor. I think it's such a critical process. I think we actually did, you know, in times past when we lived in tribal cultures, we actually did have that. You know, our tribe would provide that for us. But that reflection, and we don't have that anymore. We're all living very solitary lives, very individual lives, where we're also scared of how we feel, and we don't really understand it. And so we don't have that opportunity for that reflection and that perspective.
Yeah, I think even in more modern times, like, I know, like, 30 or 40 years ago, it would have been, like, the culture to speak to, like, your hairdresser or, like, the butcher or... you know, someone about, like, what was going on for you. There's probably more of a sense of that. But I think as our lives have got a little bit busier and things like that, that community's still there. It's just moved online. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know about you, but I find, like, there is still that real sense of, like, community and people want to listen and want to help. It's just not as readily available as it was before in person. It's just moved online, mm-hmm. is my perspective anyway.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's out there. I know, I hear a lot of people that I know kind of bash social media because of its negative aspects. And while I do totally recognize those negative aspects, some of those things are not good at all. But if we kind of build it in the right way and look for it in the right places, you can get that support. And I think it's important because we can get support that we've never had access to before. I mean, no matter what you feel or what you think, there is somebody else in the world feeling and thinking that.
Yeah.
And you can reach them on social media. And I think it can do the most that we've ever had as far as seeking validation for how we feel and how we think. And getting that validation. We've never had that opportunity as a species before. And I think it's really awesome that we can get it that way. I think a lot of times about little kids or teenagers, so you can feel so isolated and alone with what you're experiencing and what you're feeling.
Yes.
That we now have the ability to reach out to a world full of people to understand that you're not alone in feeling that. And I think that is an awesome thing.
Yeah, that's what I love about this. Like, you know, I get to do the podcast, and like years ago, like, you know, 20, 30 years ago, you would have had to have your own radio show to do something like this. Whereas because of technology, like, I can just do this and upload it, and, you know, you've got people that can hear it if they want to. You know,
I think it's amazing.
It's a great time to be alive.
Yeah, it really is. I know it comes with its own unique challenges, but there isn't any point in our history where we haven't had challenges that were unique to that time.
Yeah, yeah.
And good to remember that, to keep that in perspective. There's a lot of doom and gloom going around in the world, and it's like, oh, the world's going to shit, and, you know, we're in crisis. And it's like, you know what, guys? Pretty much our world has always been in crisis.
Yeah.
There has been a time in human history where our world hasn't been in one sort of crisis or another.
Yeah.
And I think it's really important to remember that and to keep a healthy perspective on it, because we can get swept away in that, even though that's not necessarily the reality.
Yeah.
You get swept away in it.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I've got a couple more questions before we close out the show, because, like, I really feel like this is a good time to maybe, like, hopefully educate people. So I want to pick your brains, because I don't know what some of these alternative therapies are, so I wanted to ask you about them. So, like, for example, I absolutely no idea what Reiki is. And I only know from like popular media, like what a psychic is, and you know, can you explain some of these alternate therapies for like anyone that, you know, doesn't know, so they get a bit more context for you and your line of work?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there are so many, but I can focus on a few. Reiki I know very well because I've actually been a Reiki master for over 20 years now, and I've taught it for 20 years as well. So it's actually a really ancient healing technique that goes back, its roots go back about 10 to 15,000 years actually, but it was rediscovered, I'm saying in quotes, nobody can see that, but I'm
I can see your fingers moving.
rediscovered back in Japan in the early 1900s.
Sure.
And it's known as laying on of hands, hands-on healing, but it actually doesn't have to look like that. And what it really is, the direct translation of Reiki is spiritually guided life force energy. It's unique in the energetic world because it's one of the only modalities where you are literally kind of channeling a wisdom, a force of wisdom through you and to another person. You're not actually manipulating someone's energy field or anything like that. You're actually just letting the energy flow to them through you, and that person uses it the way they need to. There are a lot of misconceptions about what Reiki actually is. And actually, if you look on Wikipedia, I'm really upset with Wikipedia right now because they, they're listing Reiki as a form of faith healing. And it's like, whoa, actually, it has nothing to do with faith. It has nothing to do with religion or dogma. It doesn't follow any belief system whatsoever.
Sure.
It actually predates all of those belief systems. So it's interesting. There's always been a debate. Even when I started 20 years ago, there was a debate, you know, Christian people wanted to claim that it was Christian and Buddhists wanted to claim that it was Buddhist. And like, well, actually, it has nothing to do with religion at all.
So it's kind of separate from all of that, really?
It's separate from all of them, yeah.
Okay, that's good to know.
Belief system at all.
Yeah.
Yeah. So proponents of it, like myself, we say that it follows, that it flows from a source, a higher source. It doesn't matter what that source is. The source can be whatever you call it. It doesn't follow any specific religion or dogma. But basically, you tap into the energy, and the energy flows out your hands to another person, and that person uses it the way they need to. There have been all kinds of miraculous things that have happened in Reiki sessions for people. I personally, we don't claim that it's a cure. We don't use that word. I do see people bouncing that word around in the energy world, and I get really upset about that.
Yeah.
Because there really is no such thing. It's like in the psychology world, we don't say it's a cure for anything. It's a treatment modality.
Yeah.
But I've seen Reiki do everything from, you know, people having just basic stress relief and falling asleep, to like mystical experiences, to past life memories, to instantaneous healing from terminal illness on the table. It's kind of miraculous. And I swear by it. But there are many, many other modalities. Some work basically in energy medicine. We're talking about ones that all use the concept of life force energy.
Yeah.
And that life force energy, they believe, is what animates us. It's like, well, your heart beats, but what tells your heart to beat? You know, our organs and systems work, but what tells them to work?
Yeah.
And, you know, when, if you believe that we continue on when we die, well, what's that part of you that continues on that's with you now? And, you know, in that thinking, that is what we call your life force energy. And there's a whole lot of science that's now supporting energy medicine, and some really great research that's been done for the last 15 years that supports it all. It's interesting that science is finally supporting what mystics have known for about 15,000 years.
Well, it's interesting. It's like the same with meditation. Like, that's exploding at the moment because, you know, there's a lot of light science going into that. So I've heard. I don't know anything about meditation, but
same idea, right? The mystics have been promoting meditation for about 10 to 15,000 years as well. And they might not have called it that. Didn't call it mindfulness, but they were promoting it. And yeah, now our science is finally catching up and supporting it. It's interesting. I always approach energy medicine from a scientific point of view. I actually approach everything I do from a scientific point of view. It's interesting over the years, the people that know what I do that just assume that I approach everything based on faith and trust and something obscure, and I don't. I never have. To me, I always approach everything scientifically. And I think what we forget is that the scientific method also includes things like observation and anecdotal evidence. That's part of the scientific method. That's part of how we know something works. And interestingly enough, even in the medical profession, you know, doctors themselves will tell you they don't actually know how certain medications work. They've just tried it and observed it, seen it does work, and so they use it.
Yeah.
And so that's part of the scientific method too. And so we have that in the energy world. We have observational science. We have anecdotal evidence. We can see it working in those ways. But now we've also got the research that's supporting it as well. So the blind studies and the control groups and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So it's happening. It's becoming mainstream. I mean, we have millions and millions and millions of people worldwide practicing some form of energy medicine. And there are cultures all over the world that have always practiced it. You know, in the West, we're just starting again. We had a huge surge in spiritualism in the 1920s. But after that, you know, there were wars and all this pursuit of science and technology. We kind of got away from it. Now we're coming back to it again.
Yeah.
But because of the accessibility of everything with the internet, I mean, we have so much more access to the information. I mean, when I first learned, it didn't exist. So, you know, I had to trust what my Reiki master was telling me.
Yeah.
And she was telling me what her master told her. So, like, interestingly, I'm not very far down the lineage from where it was first rediscovered in Japan. I'm very close to that lineage. So I got a lot of the original information, which is really cool. Mm. But a lot of it gets really, really diluted now. So it's because it's become popular, what we're seeing is a whole lot of marketing strategies going on where people are making claims or talking about all of these modalities in certain ways that are not accurate.
Yeah.
They're not really true. It's just to sell more services or sell more DVDs, etc. So that's all part of, to me, part of the ethical considerations in it.
Mm.
But like I said, we have those ethical considerations in every profession in the world. So.
Yeah. Totally agree. Yeah.
So, sorry, I think I might have veered off topic there.
No, it's all right.
As far as, you know, psychic goes, well, psychics basically use an intuitive ability to connect into bigger information so they can kind of tell you certain things about you that you might not have access to yourself. So things like, you know, your past lives, or they can connect into stuff that might have happened in childhood that you weren't aware of, or, you know, certain relationship issues. They can connect on an energetic level too. Mediumship is when they connect into someone, a loved one who's passed on, that kind of thing. It's usually called mediumship. There is an interesting thing I'm finding right now, though, where a lot of the terms that were traditionally used to define something like mediumship, now that it's become so popular, people are using those words to describe a whole bunch of other things.
Mm.
And so it's becoming quite confusing. I can't imagine what it would be like someone trying to enter into this, a consumer trying to enter into this right now and figuring out what all this stuff actually is, because the words are just diluting it so much that everything's just become a big sea of confusion.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, which is why I'm not necessarily a fan of licensing or registration in this field, because I think it's such a broad field that requires so much. I think it really kind of castrates the field if we do that. But I think we really do need standards in place and guidelines in place so that we can have clear understandings about what it is. You know, it's kind of like, well, you use the word hypnosis and we know what we're talking about, right?
Yeah.
In the energy world, if you use the word mediumship right now, you're not sure what they're talking about. With Reiki, you're talking about a whole bunch of different things right now in the world if you use the word Reiki. And so it's very confusing to navigate.
Yeah.
And yeah. Even just explain what all of it is, we don't really know, right?
Yeah.
Like, I'm glad you asked, because most of us really don't know. We don't have an understanding of it all.
Mm.
So it becomes then especially difficult to try to, if you are deciding to go to someone, then how do you decide who to go to?
Yeah.
You don't even know what to look for. And that's part of why I wanted to write the book too, to help people know what to look for.
It's interesting because, like, the undertone of, like, some of what you were talking about, for some people could be interpreted as religious, because, like, you know, when you mention, like, this is just like playing devil's advocate here, but, like, you know, for some people it could be interpreted as religious, because, like, past lives implies that there's a rebirth process and, you know, all right. that sort of stuff, whereas, like, an atheist would be like, well, that I don't think that's, like, real, or, you know, that sort of thing.
Right. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, past life talk implies that you have a soul, and there are different religious doctrines that don't believe in that. So, yeah, absolutely. And it kind of can cross over those lines very easily, and it is hard to know where those boundaries lie.
Mm.
And that's always the case when we do things as human beings, right? It's always going to cross over those lines of doctrine and dogma and religion in some way, because those are so intertwined with what we are as human beings, with how we live a life. And so we're always going to cross them over somehow.
Yeah.
I'm always a fan of trying to keep them as uncrossed as humanly possible.
Yeah.
I like clarity. I like clarity. I like boundaries. I'm a fan of boundaries.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I think it makes everything easier. But as human beings, we tend to be very messy. We don't have those lines clearly defined. And especially in something like energy medicine, that is, we don't have the information about it, so it's a very misunderstood field to begin with.
Mm.
So then to try to build clarity around it is even more difficult, to try to uncross those lines. Yeah, it becomes tough.
Yeah.
You know, and I can say I have had clients over the years too where the information I was presenting to them didn't mesh with their religious beliefs. That's okay. I can't tell you where to, you know, land with all of that.
Yeah.
Like, I can't tell someone where to figure out how you balance those two things, if you balance them at all. I don't know that. I think my job is just to be as clear as humanly possible with the construct and boundaries with what I do.
Yeah.
And then we can take that information, use it, not use it, apply it to our lives or not, you know, put it on a shelf if it doesn't fit.
Yeah.
Maybe it'll sometime later. But yeah, it's just, I think it's interesting because it's like we were talking about earlier. It's like being really clear on what your role is in it. So for me as a practitioner, it's like, yeah, I gotta be crystal clear on what my role is and where that role does not extend. And to make sure that I'm working within that, and to be clear that, yeah, it's not about me.
Yeah.
And it's not about what I believe. I can do my work, but in the end, it is about what my client believes. So we work within that as much as we can.
So to help someone, this is my last sort of question around this area, I guess. So to really help people at home, like, if they are seeking out something, you know, alternative, like an alternative method of therapy, you know, what would your, like, I don't know, what would your advice to be on what to look out for, like, things and traits in people to avoid that are, like, you know, say, like, Reiki masters, or, like, they might be, like, they might claim to be, like, a psychic or medium. Like, what would you say are the things to avoid in someone, you know, that you're going out and seeking alternative therapy from, to help, like, protect people?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that I would encourage people to be wary of is the wow factor. So anyone that's claiming to do something really wow, you know, so a Reiki person that's claiming to cure something, or treat something specific. It's a big red flag if anyone is stepping over lines where they're saying, you know, this modality can treat your anxiety, treat your depression. Well, here in the West, those are clinical terms.
Yeah.
And only the psychological association members are allowed to use those terms. So if anybody in the alternative world is claiming to address that, that should raise a red flag. Most people don't know that. So the red flag never gets raised. To me, it's an instant red flag.
Yeah.
If you're claiming to do these things, it's not ethical. But they don't even know that it's not ethical, which is why we have so many problems.
Yeah.
So the wow factor, anybody claiming to do too much over the top or a cure. I've seen the word cure bandied around a lot lately.
Yeah.
And I talk about some really, really important things in the book, things like the right questions to ask someone you're going to. If you go to an intuitive, you know, asking them where they're sourcing their information from and how they source it. And I go into quite a bit of detail about that in the book because I think it's super, super important what they're connecting into in order to bring you information.
Yeah.
So, and again, I'm always cautious about anybody that crosses the line in order to sell you something. So if somebody is, you know, checking on something internally in you when you haven't given them consent to do that, personally, I'd stay far, far away because that's a boundary that they haven't considered. And if they haven't considered that boundary, what other ones haven't they considered as well? You have to be able to go to someone and feel safe going to that person, knowing that your privacy is going to be respected, your confidentiality is going to be respected. You know, I see so many people working from a place of ego. That's such a dangerous thing, you know, and you want to know that you're going to go to someone who's not working from that place. And you can kind of tell the people who are coming from that place because they are very big at promoting their services in a very certain way. I think we can all pick that out when we see it, if we know to look for it.
Mm.
So it's hard. I mean, it's not black and white, cut and dry.
Yeah.
That's why I had to write a whole book on it, and I write my whole blog on it as well, because there's so much more than what I can even put in the book.
it's
a big thing. Because there's so many different modalities, we're not just talking about one, we're talking about so many. Like I said, 1,000 modalities being practiced worldwide, that's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
So to try to understand them all is a really vast field. But I'd say those are probably the most important things.
Interesting.
I'd be wary of a wow factor.
All right. That's really useful. Thank you. Like I say, I don't know a lot about this, so it's just, it's good whilst we've got someone who's like a bit of a knowledge expert on, like, you know, it's good to be able to ask this sort of question. So thank you.
Yeah.
So before we close out and before I get like information on, you know, where people can go to find you and stuff like that, I've started asking people this in the last couple of episodes, you know, what's something like quirky or like unexpected about you that most people don't know? So like, you know, it could be something you're obsessed with at the moment. It could be something, you know, that's like a little bit weird. Like it could be whatever.
The first thing that's popping in my mind is, you guys have it in the UK too, but the show, The Voice. People singing and trying to make it as a singing career just makes me bawl my face off, like, every single time I watch it. Relentlessly bawl my face off every single episode, but I can't not watch it. I'm totally addicted.
That's good to know.
And I like whiskey.
What was that? Sorry, I missed that. The connection went.
What, did you miss it? I like whiskey.
Ah, whiskey. Okay. That's respectable.
Yeah. Well, I think it's kind of surprising that a lot of people do kind of get these ideas when you're in a certain profession. You kind of get their ideas about how straight-laced you are or what you must like or not like. And yeah, I like whiskey.
Yeah, good. That's awesome. You gave a good answer. I'm impressed with that.
Thank you.
So where can people find you? I know you've got a website because I've been and checked it out. So what's your website for people at home?
I actually have three websites right now. So my main one is HeidiLight.com. And then there is my online blog, resource center, and member-based site called Wisdom House. And it's WisdomHouseLearning.com. And I also started a social movement. It's called The Real Revolution. And the website for it is getrealforrealchange.com.
Yeah.
You can find that on my Wisdom House site as well.
Lovely.
Yeah, I'm excited about Wisdom House because it gives me a chance to continue the conversations that I have in the books or conversations that we have like today to really keep those going. I think they're important. And it's a member-based site so people can join and network with other like-minded people, and that's a great aspect to it too.
Awesome. And what sort of social media are you on? Where can people find you on social media?
Twitter and Instagram, and I have a Facebook page for all of those sites as well, so quite a few pages.
Lovely. What's your name, like what's your handle name on those platforms?
So Wisdom House is Wisdom House Learning. I have one for the book, and it's Ethics in Energy Medicine. The social movement is Get Real for Real Change. And then I just have my personal one. It's heidi.light.33.
Lovely.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Thank you very much. I really appreciate you being on the show. Like I say, it's just something really different. And, you know, for those of you listening, like, I know it's going to be something a little bit different, something alternative. But, like, I think if you approach it with an open mind, it's we've talked a lot about a lot of different things, really, things to do with emotions as well as alternative therapies. I think it's just been a really interesting conversation, and you know, it's been a chance for me to learn a little bit. You know, I don't know what some of these things are that you've spoken about, but I have come away knowing a little bit more, and I just appreciate you for that, and appreciate you sharing your knowledge and expertise with us. Yeah, it means a lot. Thank you.
Oh, thank you too. Yeah, thanks for indulging me too. I talk forever about this stuff.
No, it's fine.
Go off on many, many tangents, but I appreciate it.
No, it's no problem at all. So that's been the episode, guys. So this has been Know Yourself with Dan Udell and Heidi Light. So until next time, guys, peace out.